conservator who's putting the automaton, that's a hard word for me to say, automaton.
Yes.
I always want to, I want to do the auto part, and then, but then it just go automaton just doesn't sound right.
I can do it now, but I had a lot of trouble at the beginning.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The woman who's putting together the automaton, Catherine, she's just lost her lover, and she's nuts, crazy with grief. How do you do it? Because she is not of sound mind for much of this book.
No. Well, I think she clearly has really, really loved this man. And she, it's a sudden and unexpected death with a grief that can't be really expressed to one person. Maybe in the end, another couple. Yes, I think grief... Well, you know what? I've never really experienced what she's experienced. So what I was about to say is inauthentic. And what I was going to say to you is, well, you know, grief can unhinge one. But that would sort of give me an authority that I don't really have, because I've never personally experienced this. But what I certainly have loved, and if you understand anything about the feelings of love, then it's not too hard to get yourself in the position of loss. And that's just how I thought she would be. I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe there's a bit about how I fear I would be in that situation, put into that. I don't know.
And she has there's a companion story that goes along with it, the story of Henry?
Yeah, Henry.
Who is, explain about Henry, because he's quirky.
He's a rich, sort of hopeless, sweet man, I think, who I'm very, very fond of. So this is the 19th century. The family from the north have railways. He doesn't really seem cut out for the business, or when he gathers, probably doesn't do anything too much. But his marriage is in an awful sort of a state, and that is that they've lost their first child to consumption, a little girl. And now they have a little boy, and he is showing symptoms of the same thing. And the wife cannot bring herself to love the child for fear of grief, for fear of loss. And Henry, the one thing about Henry, as Henry would say, you know, he's a glass half full man. And he'll be a glass half full man when the glass is in shards on the floor. And he drives her nuts completely. And basically she drives him out of the house. And it's you really understand, although he's not saying this at first, this is the end of the marriage. And that all of his feelings have been sort of, he's shown the little boy, the sick little boy, the drawings of Wilkinson's duck, which have been reproduced in the London Illustrated News, and the boys love them. And then the next day, the wife says, "So you promised him to get this made?" He said, "No, I didn't do that at all." "Oh, you're so cruel! How could you do that?" "Clearly, well, I'd have to go to Europe." "Well, you know what must be done. You have what must be done," she says. And then you feel him getting kicked out, and he persuades himself that this will be good for his son, and it'll induce a sort of state of excitement and interest in life. But it's sort of, I think it's probably not really quite true, but all of his grief and all of his loss is channeled into having this thing made, which will make everything all right. It will also create life in a way.
It starts off in the book with Catherine's story and then Henry's story, but by the time we get about, half, two-thirds of the way through, we're reading along with her.
Yeah.
And it almost seems to be feeding back at times.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know I was going to do that, but it just became clear to me that, you know, you have somebody reading a book, emotionally engaging in the book, trying to imagine the missing bit, looking, you know, when you read historical documents, the person writing them hasn't really, you know, thought about how you're going to imagine what's there. So she's trying to peer through time and peer through the missing pieces in the sentence and try to imagine the thing. So we're getting the reader's experience with the page. And we as readers all know what that's like. You know, that we form a relationship with the text. We have a way that we imagine it. We sometimes think and I've had this experience as a young man, certainly, that I'm the only person on earth who can possibly, this is for me. And we then, and this is a young person's thing mostly, I guess, you get angry when other people even know about the book, because it was our book, and it was written for us, and you see it in paperback and bookstores, it's awful, because it was yours. And so I think Catherine forms that sort of relationship with Henry's writing and becomes very attached to him, and it is an attempt anyway to have the relationship between the reader and the writer become sort of more active, I suppose.
By the end of the book, I was trying to figure out if Catherine was putting together the swan or whether the swan was putting together Catherine.
that's just beautiful reading. I mean, it's lovely. It never occurred to me, but I think that that would be a nice way, a lovely way to read it. That was not my plan, but see, that's what readers give back to you. It's just gorgeous. Thank you.
The book is The Chemistry of Tears. I've been speaking with the author, Peter Carey, and The Chemistry of Tears, published by Random House of Canada.